Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Indeed it is. Hockey Central at noon. Again with Scott Morrison and Gord Stellick. I'm Brad Fay. Happy last day of school. Is this a big day in your household this morning, or is there still like we all have kids, different ages, but was the excitement there?
Yeah, it also means a kid doesn't go to private school, right? Because they're off like 5 weeks ago or something. But
sorry about that.
Yeah, the rich guy over here. But last day of school, and it's funny watching Carey Price last night was kind of like, you know, if you're having a graduation or school awards,
absolutely,
like you'd be the proudest parents, right? Yeah. And next to you would
be... And he was a little nervous and awkward because, which he should be.
But the other parents would get ticked off, like, why does he get three or four medals, right? Can't the school split it up a little bit?
So, well, and he gets up the fourth time and says, I have nothing left to say. That was no kidding. Yes. you used the phone book and thanked everybody.
Hart, Vezina, Jennings, the Lindsay. I think he would have won the Shenley if they still gave it out. And I love the CFL Awards. The players used to come out first in their uniform, and then they'd go get changed and come back with the tuxedos on. I don't think the NHL would take that. But, yeah, what a year. One of the great, you know, not since the days maybe of Gretzky. We've seen one guy, and he's not going to be winning any Jennings or Vezina, but seeing one player completely dominate and establishing himself as the class of the NHL this season.
Now, we had a bit of a debate as to whether or not the goaltender should be eligible for the Hart Trophy, but the players themselves voted him as the best player in the NHL. So that's the verification.
It is, and it's amazing how often that's different. You know, that when you look back at the history, it wasn't automatic that the Hart and the Lindsay from the players is the same.
By definition, they're two different awards. In the sense that one is the best player and one is the most valuable to his team.
And that's good. And the other side of that argument is sometimes there should be two awards. I was thinking baseball and Kirk Gibson in 88, and before the dramatic playoff home run, but he had a very average year statistically, but he won the MVP because he dragged the Dodgers into the postseason late in his career, and they gave him that, and people argued and said, so-and-so is bad. He was the most valuable to his team, and that's what it's
about. Well, the award from the other thing, the award from the NHLPA, it's funny, is it used to be called the Lester Pearson Trophy. And I can remember an agent sending a contract proposal back in the 80s, and including all the trophies, including the Lester Pearson Trophy. And I thought he was talking about what the Blue Jays and Expos used to play for, right?
Yes.
It was called the Pearson,
Pearson Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah. So that's one of the first things Bob Goodnote did was said, this trophy nobody even knows about, and it should be the most important. And they had to do it on the side, right? It wasn't part of the main NHL awards, so the NHL Players Association.
They always put out a release at noontime,
And this trophy had been dormant for 20 years, and he said, what the heck? I mean, our players should be voting, and the odd time it differentiates a little bit, but that's been added now for a number of years to the mainstream of the awards. And the other thing, just looking at the Hart Trophy, like you look at the list, and Dominic Hasek twice did it that way, Jacques Plante as well. It's just the Jose Theodore one, I think, that got everybody. No offense to Jose Theodore, but it's just the one that it was the last time, 2002, that everyone seemed to think, just leave goaltenders alone.
Yeah, and just to throw the off year in there.
And just an aside, the reason it's called the Ted Lindsay, beyond him being a Hall of Famer and was a great player in his day, is that he was very, very prominent in the starting of the Players Association way back when.
I thought you were going to say intimidated everybody into naming,
well, that too. Terrible Ted, as he was known.
But then you meet him, and he's like the nicest guy. I think he's supposed to be 7'2". And
how do they call you terrible? You're nice.
Yeah. Hey, the awards that Carey Price won, there were slam dunks everybody knew going in. I think the coach of the year, the Adams, was maybe the most hotly contested. You could not only get a vote everywhere for the three finalists, three or four more guys in. So you can't argue with who won, but are you surprised that Bob Hartley won? Or if going in, did you think he was the front runner?
I'm trying to think I thought he was one of the front runners.
Yeah, I agree. One of those years, a lot of
guys.
It was
going to be close. And I know I did a hit on our radio station afterwards last year who wanted to know who voted for Randy Carlyle. I've always kidded that Randy Carlyle deserved being coach of the year the way they went the second half. I don't vote. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. So it's not that. But the fact Joel Quenneville got no votes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it just shows consistently, as if you're watching on TV, you see Bob Hartley getting the award. And it traditionally has been the guy, the Roger Nielsen effect, the guy that brings that first year improvement. I know he's been there for more than 1 year, but
I know
improvement in the team. and then unfortunately is ripe to get fired if ownership and management expect that's going to be commonplace every year. And you know, Joel Quenneville, the 24/7, the road to the Outdoor Classic, Winter Classic, I really enjoyed watching him, like Barry Trotz getting assimilated with a new team. And then Joel Quenneville with a team he's been a number of years, but just that connection and a team, you know, getting them to fire on all cylinders to try to win what they did, a third Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Too often we underestimate the job the guy does with the great teams.
Yep.
But Scotty won one, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think one. We'll look it up.
Yeah. And I remember just having a conversation over coffee with Scotty well after he'd left coaching. And he just said, you know, looking back, he says, sometimes the toughest teams to coach are the great teams. Mm-hmm. Because you've got to balance egos. You've got so many good players, and you have to make sure they all feel that they're the most valuable and that they get the proper ice time and that you utilize them in key situations.
Keep them motivated when they won.
And keep them motivated after you've won that one, that they want to have that second one and go on and on and on. And so, I think sometimes we just take for granted what the great coaches do, the Babcocks and the Quenvilles and guys like that. But certainly in Bob Hartley's case, you know, you look at it, and that was a team – that had zero expectations. Absolutely. Coming out of the gate, that everybody thought was going to be in the McDavid sweepstakes. And lo and behold, we all know how that played out.
Yeah, and on that note, the schedule comes out, and it's a Canucks and Flames on opening night, which is perfect because everybody who's fans out west, including me watching those teams growing up, we all wanted that to reestablish it. And boy, did it ever, among the fan bases and among the teams. So opening night will be a
lot of fun.
So
you know you're working that night.
It's the back half of a doubleheader. Yeah, we'll see. I'll be watching. I know that. And then the Rookie of the Year. You know, when they flashed on the screen, the all-rookie team, and it was coming across, it's one of the first years I can remember that almost any fan would recognize every name as a star in the making or a bona fide star already. A lot of times, all-rookie team, there's a guy that stretched. He had 11 goals, but there was nobody else to put on. It was one of the best rookie classes in a long, long time.
And it's funny, again, the trials and tribulations of playing defense. Like, mm-hmm. The forwards, the Johnny Hockeys of the world, get those great highlights when he single-handedly gets a hat trick to come back and beat a team like the Boston Bruins, for example. And Aaron Ekblad was a guy that, as the year went on, he kind of said, wow, yeah, we really weren't expecting a guy like that first, much like Seth Jones before. Mm-hmm. You know, it just takes a little bit of time to be the stud 82-game defenseman in the National Hockey League, and he did that quite well with the Florida Panthers. And, you know, by the end of the season, he was my vote. Again, I don't have a vote, but he was. And earlier, and that's a tough, tough thing to do. And certainly I think and that's a big thing when we talked about defensemen and how the number one D recently, whether it's the Victor Hedmans or the Drew Doughtys of the world, have really been can't-miss guys ultimately in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great rookie class, and we're going to see more and more of it because so many kids are coming in and playing right away and playing very well. But I voted for him because you look at a young defenseman stepping in and playing the minutes he did against the players he was. And I talked to Dennis Potvin about it, Hall of Fame defenseman. Yeah. And, you know, he just said this was a kid 18 years old who had the maturity of a 25-year-old. And maturity in the sense of how he conducted himself on and off the ice. So when you think about how hard it is to come into the league and play that position as a young player, as good as the other guys were, you have to factor that in, I think, and when you're making your decision.
Yeah, and throughout the year, it went, you know, on a nightly basis here, and we were doing games and everything. Early on, it was Forsberg's going to win it running away. Ekblad was always a solid guy. And then Johnny Hockey makes his run. It just felt like one of those years where whoever, the last guy standing kind of thing, and it turned out to the guy that was standing all year, as you say, Aaron Ekblad.
Stone had a great run, but he was by and large from January on.
Really late.
But he scored a ton of really important goals when Ottawa was playing those must-win games. So, I mean, all could have been
he and
great
Dubnyk
choice.
Would be if they had second-half awards.
If
there had been a lockout to shorten it in the second-half awards and those guys in there getting a run. But he's saying he and Stone rewarded with a contract as well by the Ottawa Senators. So,
you know, the Calder Trophy in a lot of ways is like an election campaign. You've got to time it well. You know, so like early on, Philip Forsberg, because there was a trade involved, you know, with him, and you're saying, wow, how could they, one team give him up, another team get him? And then all of a sudden you're so honed on him that it can't sustain 82 games for a lot of guys. You know what I mean? You kick it around where some of the other awards you say right in November, okay, he's going to win the Norris Trophy or he's my Hart Trophy guy. And it's Ekblad really, I guess it signified what he did over 82 games, the consistency.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Chris Johnson about this in a moment, but what about Gary Bettman's chat and opening it up to, you know, the possibility of expansion? They're going to take bids and everything else. I mean, is this something we, Scott, we expected? Or, I mean, it's...
Yeah,
he's always coy about it, but now flat out.
You know. Yeah, he's always been coy about it, and it's not something we're pursuing, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the way this whole Las Vegas thing has played out, it was inevitable that they were going to have to open the doors and see who's out there and who's serious about it. What was fascinating to me is he said that the expansion fee has to start with a five.
Five, yeah.
And you know that there are at least three, five zeros after that five.
Now,
so
what was
that is a large, large number.
The last time somebody came in, it was under 100 million.
I think they said, we'll confirm it with Chris, but yeah. I believe it was Atlanta was 70 or 80, yeah. 80 million. Sorry.
And now we're talking 500
yeah.
million. I mean, that may...
That's a tough business model, though. I mean, George, yeah. you've been on the other side of it where you see what the expenses are and how it is to run a franchise. But you think about 500 coming out of the gate, and then do you have to build a rink? You know, different yep. situations. Some have a building. Some cities have buildings.
And
some
it's
in the works.
Driven, isn't it? Like compared to other leagues, it's better. The TV deal's better, and the
but it's not better, what it is in the
it's
other
not,
leagues.
Not like the other leagues. No, it's still, no. You mean, need to know yeah. that you've got that fan base.
Well, but what they always argued about on the NHL side was the word cost certainty about the cap and that. And this is the first time in the cap era, because before. Part of the problem was the owners got excited to divvied up the expansion fees, and then it just took one of the new teams, like an Alexander Dague contract that screwed up the rookie situation, or you know Anaheim, you know Paul Kariya, give him credit for getting what he wanted to get, but all of a sudden they could be used as comparables in arbitration and other, mm-hmm. you know other things that way. So they wanted to get that in place, and I just get a sense as well, Scott and Brad, that you know there was San Jose was a place they wanted to get to. I think a big reason was Norm Green was going to go there anyway with his Minnesota team, so. They basically kept it in abeyance for 1 year and got them in. Anaheim, they wanted to get the Disney group in. You know, that was the next one. And Las Vegas now. Like, this is one where it's before it's like bring the offers in, but the NHL seems to want to jump in first.
Be the first one.
Make it a priority in Las Vegas.
Yeah, Anaheim, Florida, Miami at the time was, of course, the Bruce McNall expansion. Yes. So.
Man, it's gone.
He and the NHL got rewarded.
It's
so.
Gone wild. Gil Stein, yeah.
Yeah.
So much of it. I mean, how much... Do you trace back? Obviously, it has an impact, but a lot of people maybe do they give too much credit to Gretzky in L.A. turning that city into a hockey town while he was there that got this expansion to the south going? Do you think there was that turn on to the game because of him? I mean, there was, but how much of it?
I think there's a huge part of it, and when you look now at minor hockey and you start looking at minor midget drafts and now looking at NHL drafts, there's a ton of kids that are coming out of that California system, yeah. and a lot of kids that move up to Canada to play some of their midget, minor right. midget hockey to get into the stream for the draft for CHL
Craig
teams.
Craig Cox was the only guy for a while. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
He was from California.
So there's a lot of kids and Detroit a lot of good Wings. Kids, yeah. and then there's a lot of former players that are down there involved in the system in terms of coaching and player development, that type of thing. So I think it had a big impact on the system, and you're seeing it in a lot of those Sun Belt cities that. They're playing good hockey yeah. down there. I mean, my son had a tournament in Florida a couple of years ago, and those teams were really, really good. I mean, you figure there might be one, but there were several that were top-notch teams.
I played minor hockey, very limited in Vancouver. We used to play Seattle every year, and that was the guaranteed win. We loved it because it was all
they wouldn't put
digits,
you in overtime, and they wouldn't, yeah, yeah. and you played
yeah,
bad teams.
Right.
So
it helped the goals against average.
Let's
but it
not
was
labor on this career.
10-3, you know, and then now it's come back. I'm going to get the
schedule. How do we feel about that Las Vegas market?
I honestly, flat out, if someone asked me to use the term bet on it because it's Vegas, yeah. I would say it has no chance. I just don't see it. Who am I, right? I've had just the off the top of the head, it's where going Winnipeg, going back to Quebec, and again, maybe it's the Canadian in me and the hockey fans speaking. Those are, you know, we knew Winnipeg was going to be successful. You know Quebec would be successful. I just feel like I'm 99% sure it wouldn't work in Vegas. I think the first year, there'd be great setups where every team would have its package.
It's always a yeah. honeymoon.
Right, well, and you say, okay, you know, buy your season tickets, and then you get first crack. We're going to have charters going to Vegas. And it's to see the Leafs play or to see the Canucks play. And then once that wears off, I mean, I think there's, I don't know if there's too much to do in Vegas that people don't want to go and watch a hockey game for 3 hours.
But you know, it's, I'm amazed the last number of years, that road trips are just commonplace now. It's a whole new thing in the world of sports that you go anywhere. The
Follow
Winnipeg Jet fans go everywhere. And so I just think that alone, and I don't think it'll be a one-year wonder, but I think for the visiting team destination for starters. And, you know, beyond that, that's up to the local promoter. Like, I was curious how it would go in San Jose. And that's been a strong market, really, from the word go. And I would think the NHL, that word due diligence, research, whatever it may be, they've got reasons to think it's going to go. And it really, you want to be in the 32 best markets, period. Mm-hmm. If you're the NHL or the NHL Players Association, that's the way you maximize revenues. And I know it didn't work in the minor leagues, but a lot of places haven't worked in the minor leagues that can handle a pro team.
It is a fast, you know, the fastest growing city. I mean, people always think of Las Vegas as the strip and all the hotels. There's millions of people that live there now, and, you know.
Maybe like a Quebec City has changed because Quebec City was really a small market back in the day and had trouble sustaining, although the reason they left was much different than that. But it's a bigger market now, and it's developed. It's not just a government town. It's got other corporate support. So maybe Vegas isn't the image that we have of it, but I wasn't overwhelmed by 11,000 people signing up for tickets. That kind of underwhelmed me, to be honest.
No, it's true. Yeah, you figured just...
But everybody else seems to be excited about it, and there's a lineup for suites and that type of thing. Yeah. So maybe the support is there.
That area, the suites would probably be something that, because, again, perfect thing to take people, entertain them, and you put them up. There'll be a hotel probably, you know, that's affiliated with it.
And if you're going to try in a market, that's probably one you want to roll the dice and give it a shot.
How many headlines are being written?
But when you talk about the suites, I don't know how much it is. I know the times I've been there, it's almost like everything's jammed. The last thing you have time for is a game.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other part. So I don't know. There's people that, you know, it's interesting just when you talked before about, you know, Gretzky and in LA, but also Bruce McNall, his money shorts at the end, but he was a guy that had the pizzazz to make a difference there. I mean, before that, it was the one Canadian actor, Larry Mann. He was a character actor.
Yeah.
He'd always be around the Culver City Arena. He'd be the only guy there in the 80s, and he would bemoan who was covering the Kings because he said it was like the fifth writer on the Los Angeles Times Sports and all, you know, whatever. And then, you know, Bruce McNall at least did get it, what you could do to bring it to the next level. And I would think these kind of comparables would have to be in Las Vegas to at least get that kind of splash and get in the fan, the peripheral hockey fan.
Yeah, well, Gretzky, when all the celebrities were sitting in the first row, always thinking they were good seats, right? You know, that's what you do in basketball, so you sit down there.
But Bruce was a brilliant promoter.
Absolutely.
There's no question about it.
No other things to talk about with him for sure, but not his ability to do that was fantastic. Chris Johnston, Sportsnet senior NHL columnist, is on the line, and Chris is bouncing around from Vegas. Now he's in Florida, so from the awards and from the Board of Governors meetings, GM meetings, to the draft. So, Chris, let's talk about where you just came from first before we get anything in the draft, and what'd you take away from your time in Vegas? What was the top story for you?
Well, certainly I think the expansion news was probably the story that had the most legs and you know, really kind of setting the stage for, you know, a different NHL now moving forward. So, you know, that was the one that jumped out to me, that the fact the league's going to open that process up and consider, you know, evening out the conferences and adding a couple teams and adding a lot of money in the owner's pockets.
We were kicking it around. You just were there and trying to think, what do you think about Vegas as a market? I know we don't know the total inner workings, but when you see it, do you think the NHL can fly there?
I do. I mean, really, when you talk about successful NHL teams, to me, you need a good place to play and you need a good owner. And then that's two things they have. I mean, I know that there's going to be questions until the team gets there and we see what happens with, you know, the support for the team, what the fans, you know, how they take to it, the people in the city. But, you know, I had a chance to swing by the arena they're building there and you know, it's well along the way. And Bill Foley, who's going to own the team, is you know, really highly sought after around the NHL. And he sold 13,000 season ticket deposits. So it seems to me you have all the ingredients you need there to make it work. And I would expect, you know, when teams are added in expansion, that Vegas will be one of them.
Chris, really quickly, we just had a picture of the arena on TV. Where exactly is it for those that are familiar with the Strip?
It's just off the Strip behind the New York Casino. So,
okay.
You know, pretty well situated there. And then, certainly, if you were staying in basically any of the hotels along the Strip, you could comfortably walk to games there and you know, still be kind of part of the main action for tourists.
Do we know, Chris, what the deposit actually was for those 13,000 people?
It was equivalent to what Winnipeg did a couple years ago. I don't have the numbers right off the top of my head, but basically by putting down the deposits, they're committing to being season ticket holders. If they do get a team, and you know they were somewhere in the $500 to a little over $1,000, depending on what kind of seats you were getting. So you know the people are showing some level of commitment there, and as I mentioned, if a team comes, they're on the hook for the rest of the price of the season tickets automatically.
You know, rather than now speculating, say, where Arizona's going to go, because that could happen down the road. So basically, the NHL said, look, come have a number 5 in front of your offer, and we'll look at it. So who else do you think now, just not waiting for the Arizona situation, has the kind of backing, the money, the arena, whatever? What other people are ready to ante up at this level?
Well, the most likely, I would think, is Quebec City, just because, they also have the building there, and Quebec, or immediately after the league announces, their chief executive did a scrum in Vegas and said that they intend to put forward a bid. So to me, that's the most complete other place. I mean, we all know Seattle has been sort of the apple of the NHL's eye for a number of years, but unless they get an arena built there, there's just no way to have a team move there. And as we stand here right now, that's still very much up in the air. So, perhaps this formal expansion process will help move things along with city council in Seattle. But, outside that, to me, Quebec City is the most obvious, and I'm sure, someone's going to try to do it again in Toronto, and or at least the GTA, and have a second team there.
All things being equal, do you think the NHL wants to look west before it looks east?
I think so. I mean, they kind of downplay that angle, Scott, with having the conferences in balance, I think, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to do that long term. I mean, there's only 14 teams in the West, so you only get 6 missing the playoffs there. Obviously, with 16 right now in the East, it's half the conference that doesn't make it. So I think in an ideal scenario, you would have a 32-team league, 4 divisions of 8, and geographically kind of balanced, but as we know, it's not necessarily an ideal world all the time, and I don't think it's going to preclude them from maybe adding in the East. But I do think it is a factor that will be considered here as they start entertaining these bids this summer.
Canucks were in the Eastern Conference for the first few years in the NHL, so
anything goes.
Chris Johnson, Sportsnet senior NHL columnist, now in Florida after taking in everything in Vegas. Got any names for us? Everyone's excited this time of year and leading up to the draft to throw out possible guys on the move. Anybody you want to jump on?
Not just yet. I've just flown overnight and just landed here. So
yep.
I don't have anything too fresh for you, but it's obviously a busy time. And, I would be surprised, frankly, if we don't see some trades made today. I find traditionally the day before the draft is when the action starts. And, and speaking with some GMs this week, at the meetings in Vegas, it's pretty clear there's a lot of appetite there to get things done. A lot of teams very close to the salary cap, the top end of the cap, that need to make some deals. And, conversely, you have the Arizonas of the world that need to add $18 million, give or take, in salary just to reach the salary floor. So, I do think we'll see some trades and likely, later on today. But, as I sit here now, I don't have too much fresh for you after just getting off the plane.
Absolutely.
Well, I know, and it's, like I said, I would throw a couple, see if any enlightened a bit more just a day or two at your brief stay in Vegas. So first of all, any idea what it really happened to Yuri Hudler's shoes? So I want to know what that was. And then the other one is about Arizona, that number 3 pick. Do you think they will draft, or do you think they're floating the name Strome out there as a trial balloon to bring in offers?
My sense is that Arizona is going to move that pick. Where they're at right now, obviously they had a very poor season on the ice this year, and the feeling there is they can't afford to do that again, that they have to find a way to get better. And, and speaking with Don Maloney the other day, I just got the sense from him that they're going to move that pick. They'll probably move back and get, another pick later in the first round, but they'll also, get a player who can help right away. And, let's face it, the unspoken issue with the Coyotes right now is, with the uncertainty that's been brought on by the city of Glendale. I mean, they're going to have trouble getting free agents to want to go there. And you know, some of the way they might have to build is you know, acquiring guys by trade who don't necessarily have a say in the matter. And, you know, I think the number three pick, you know, because really, I mean, we've known about Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. But you know, there's still a lot of other good players available there. And the number three pick kind of controls where things go from there. And you know, I think it's a pretty valuable one. And, you know, there's five or six teams that are chasing the Coyotes pretty hard on it. And, you know, that's why I ultimately believe we'll probably see a move come tomorrow night.
So who do you see of those five or six? Which teams are the most interested? And we speculated yesterday that Edmonton would be the perfect daily double if you could get McDavid one and then draft a defenseman of your choice with that number three pick.
Right. And I think the defenseman, Scott, is really kind of driving things there because, you know, Noah Hannafin's well thought of, Ivan Provorov as well. And you know, I think Columbus is a team that's quite interested in that. You know, they want to draft a D, and, you know, they're just far enough back in the first round that there's no guarantee they'll get one of those players if they don't move up and find a way to get one. So that's the team, you know, if I was handicapping, I think is most likely to move in there. But, you know, as we get closer, I mean, Don Maloney did say he figures the best deal is going to come on the draft floor. So, you know, he's conducting an auction, so to speak, I think right now. Maybe we'll get a surprise team in there to grab that pick and kind of determine where the dominoes fall in the first round.
All right, Chris. Well, yeah, you're traveling across the country. Get some coffee, and it's going to be a great couple of days. We'll look forward to reading your stuff and hearing from you.
Sounds good, man. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Chris Johnson, Sportsnet senior NHL columnist, joining us on Hockey Central at noon. Busy time for him, busy time for all of us. We'll take a break, come back with more. Scott Morrison, Gord Selick, and Brad Fay.
You thought Millard, Kiprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Back on Hockey Central at noon, Sportsnet Radio and TV, and on the NHL Network south of the border. Appreciate you joining us with Scott Morrison and Gord Stellick. I'm Brad Fay, and the schedule continues to, not so much leak out, it's coming out hard now, but in terms of the TV portion of it, Wednesday Night Hockey will open it up. October the 7th. It's amazing, right?
My birthday, by the way, if you're planning ahead.
Yes, of course. You better be, Scott. Doubleheader, and why not? Montreal and Toronto again, followed by Vancouver and Calgary. And we mentioned that earlier in the show, how that rivalry has been renewed out west. And then on Friday, the Maple Leafs play their first road game, and it's Detroit's home opener.
Okay.
And it is, hang on, let me confirm that. I know it's Detroit that they play, but the first one is where is it? Is the Leafs visit
at Detroit?
Yeah, but the Canadians visit the Leafs. I want to make sure that was their home opener on Wednesday, and then Friday is Detroit's home opener, the return of Babcock.
Well, and Thursday night hockey in between is Connor McDavid versus the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's provided the Oilers exercise the pick.
It's yeah, exactly. We're assuming that's a nice little start, but it never gets the. I think it's great to see Montreal and Toronto at opening night, no matter where these franchises are. And at least you give last year, and Scott Moore talked about this at the big, what do they call the fronts that they did with all the media. And he said, listen, five Canadian teams made the playoffs last year. That was great. The two that didn't made the two biggest splashes, one with the first pick and one with the coach, Mike Babcock. So there's reason to be excited across Canada for hockey come October.
I also like jumping into, for all teams, yep, some kind of decent rivalry right off the hop, because preseason NBA and NHL just doesn't cut it. I mean, it just doesn't. And then 82 games can be a long season. There's a World Series going on, NFL coming up and that. So when you get like one of those kind of real games in, like people can get that kind of their juices going in game number one rather than three or four games against for whoever you deem to be nondescript teams.
Yeah. You're not gonna mention any names.
But you mentioned the Canadian teams, and obviously there hasn't been a Stanley Cup winner from this country in the truest sense since 1993. But when you look at the state of the teams, in pretty good shape, by and large. You know, Vancouver came on and had a good year. They should still be a reasonably strong team. Got some guys on the come, some good young players, Horvat and whatnot. Calgary was a great story. They could fall back a little bit, but they're still a team that's got a bright future. Mm-hmm. Edmonton now, it's very exciting because of the draft and the off-season hirings. Winnipeg was a real good story last year. Ottawa became a very good story, and they think that they're on the verge of something. I still think they're a little bit in the development stage. And Montreal is going to be strong again. And then that leaves us with one other team. Well, but excitement there because you got a new coach, a new beginning, but there's going to be pain, as Mike Babcock said.
Absolutely.
And not to bring business stuff into it, but the litmus test and what hurt these teams so many years ago was the Canadian dollar. And once again, it's going down, but it's a whole different kettle of fish this time around as far as the team goes. I mean, the business background and everything, where, you know, 12, 14 years ago, we had Ottawa always talking about selling more, just a few more tickets, and Edmonton seeming in dire straits. Nobody wanted to seemingly own the Montreal Canadiens from Quebec. You know, George Gillette got a sweetheart deal, and good on him to get it going. So it just shows.
Calgary had a very angry fan base when they hung on to those guys. And so
the business model is just very, very different and way more stable. And then throw Ottawa in a guy like Erik Karlsson, who 12 years ago they were saying we wouldn't be able to afford to keep these kind of guys in Ottawa winning the Norris Trophy.
Well, and Gary Bettman had to come in back then with that Canadian assistance plan, or those teams didn't survive.
I know. I'm not going to apologize for Gary Bettman. Everyone has their own opinion. It's fine. But when the Canadian fans boo him, a lot of those teams, they don't really know.
They forget he saved a bunch of those franchises.
Yeah, absolutely. Before, we'll get to Ottawa in a second. But, you know, it's interesting. You say no Stanley Cup since 93. But a lot of teams in the finals. And I think by quick, loose count here, someone correct me if I'm wrong, five times the puck has dropped on a game where a Canadian team could win the Stanley Cup since then. Game 7 in 94 at the Canucks. The Canucks game 6 and 7 in 2011, and then the Oilers and Flames both went to 7 in 2004 and 2006. So five times there's been a game played where a Canadian team could end that drought and weren't able to come through. So it's not like they've been too far away, but feels like the wait could continue for a little bit. Too many good teams, especially out west. But what about the Senators, Scott? You mentioned about their future, and they lock up a couple important pieces. Mark Stone, Mika Zibanejad get deals on this day, and that comes the day after Erik Karlsson wins his second Norris Trophy. So good news for them, but as you say, maybe they, you know, it's so tough. It's just literally if they have 1 week that they weren't as good as they were, they missed the playoffs last year.
Well, that's the thing. It's hard to get a read on a team that meandered for most of the season, and even meandered after they make the coaching change. They had the identical record in the start after that change, and then all of a sudden the Hamburglar comes in and then everything just falls into place and takes off. So it's hard to get a read on that team. You don't want to overestimate it. You know, it's always the case. You don't fall in love with the team that necessarily finishes the season. You want to look at the greater body of work. But having said that, when you look at the pieces and you start with they're solid in goal, they've got an asset that they can move in goal that's going to bring them back something really, really good. And then you've got Karlsson, two Norris trophies, and the young kids up front, Stone, big future, and Zibanejad, and they've got a lot of real good pieces there. So if they're not on the verge of being a really good team, they're close.
They, as well, you know, I thought when Bobby Ryan signed was key. When he showed a commitment to staying there, because, I mean, if he walks, that's a tough one.
They've watched everybody all day.
Yeah, and you get nothing if he walks as a UFA. So I thought him in buying into the program there was huge. And then these contracts in Stone, Zibanejad, I mean, that's where they've been developing these young players. It's a second kind of contract. And so it's not going to kill them. Those are the ones that don't kill you. Those are relatively reasonable contracts for guys that appear to have some kind of potential. The great thing I did, I talked about the other day, was a guy like Clark MacArthur. Like, they can't miss on David Clarkson, for example, type contracts, or Brad Richards type contracts. I mean, they can't. Mm-hmm. They've got to fill those other little pieces smartly and astutely.
But you drop down a couple million and guys like that.
Well, like, but you talk about Bobby Ryan, give Brian Murray a lot of credit, because on the day that Alfredson walked, and it was a devastating day for Ottawa, he pulls that rabbit out of his hat a couple hours later. Yeah. And that was a huge statement that, okay, we found something really good. We're going to turn this corner and go in a different direction. And then to Gord's point, for him to show the commitment to that franchise was huge, spoke volumes as well.
You said in your day there was no awards show yet, right, when you were a GM?
There's been an award show for a long time.
No, I talked about it that it started in the early 80s, the luncheon, and then it became
it just started. I'm just wondering
but it was a show in the 80s, because I was president of the Writers Association in the mid to late 80s. And remember, I would do the Masterton presentation. That was originally at the Stanley Cup luncheon. And then I know we did the show.
And Ron McLean used to do the host, and they'd have little skits in that. I couldn't picture Dave Hodge for some reason.
Yeah. Alan Thicke hosted it a bunch of times.
Jamming with a band. But
Alan Thicke did it before.
Alex Trebek.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Alex Trebek, Ron McLean,
and he made jokes about me being the 30-year-old general manager. That about having to
Trebek did.
Yeah, it was good. Whatever.
Did he phrase it in the form of a question?
No. But about that. I think the joke was
that he's the youngest GM in the NHL. So, were you allowed to stay up this late?
That's right. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, my point being, then, since you had that experience, because you feel like this is a stepping off point. Now they get together for, you know, in this case, the meetings and then the awards, and that would be a nice sort of celebration. But then it's like, even though deals are supposedly being made, you're talking now, the sleeves roll up as they make their way to Florida. Is it a, you know, was it, again, the draft has changed because there's so much more information, but was that the time when it sort of kicked in? Was the timing, I guess before I asked, was the timing the same? Were the awards just before the draft then too?
Yeah, you know, the...
If you were allowed to stay up, do you remember?
I was allowed, but the awards, it's funny. It is more when the Stanley Cup's presented, then it's like everybody else steps back into the ring and you start dealing more with business for next year. So whenever you could gather, and I said back then, actually watching the awards, I sat beside Cliff Fletcher and we traded, we got Rob Ramage for a second round pick based on sitting beside him in the awards back in 1989. Yeah, you know, it's just that kind of thing, or confirmed it. We chatted
Cliff
before.
Was and, Calgary then.
Yeah, and went at it that way. So, and I mentioned that with the salary cap, the players, of course, were a free agency as well. So there's less freedom for the teams. They've got to get under the cap, so they have to make some moves. There's more freedom for the players because they can become free agents at a certain age. So there's more that's going on, and you're right. It's kind of, you renew your optimism towards next year. When that first kid, whoever you draft, comes to the table, especially a Connor McDavid or Eichel. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, you've had a horrible year, but it's like all worth it, right? It's all of a sudden worth it, and next year's going to be better. And then after that, where the American Hockey League meetings, which are usually held in Hilton Head, South Carolina in July, they're the best meetings. A lot of NHL guys go down there because they bring their family down, but that was more
than
one.
And you play tennis.
You play tennis and golf and everything, but that's more like you've survived. That means you're employed for next year. That's kind of the one that you've moved on to the next grade for next year, so you kind of breathe a sigh of relief.
And the essence of the draft in July 1st has always been that it just, as your point, Gord, regardless of how bad the season was, suddenly you've got hope because you think you've found the guy in the draft that's going to be the guy that leads you out of the wilderness, and then you think you've gone out and signed a player or two that's going to make you that much better. And so you do feel there's a sense of that you've made your franchise better, and you've got a chance, and there's a little more hope as you roll towards training camp.
And all summer long, you look at the board and you see optimism. Where during the season, you look at the board and you're angry. Like after a 9-2 loss, you look at all the play and you go, and you just want to tear a strip off all. Then the board in the summer, and now you start to, well, if I just put, what about if I get Brad Fay here or what, you know, whatever. And it's just a great kind of 2 months. And then sure enough, some teams, the board looks pretty good, you know, and the season, other guys, the board just didn't pan out.
What about 85? What was were you involved with the Leafs and media relations at that point?
Yeah. I was, at that point, I was the assistant to the general manager, Jerry McNamara, and Stan Abodiak, our public relations director, had passed away. So I was handling that in the interim.
Okay.
And then my brother Bob actually took over right at the draft table that day. He'd been working with NHL Central Scouting and Harold Ballard, you know, had talked to him before. Anyway, so the 85 draft was the one in Toronto, Metro Toronto Convention Center. And we didn't let Wendell Clark or anybody know who we were going to take first overall. Yeah. So there
it was basically he and Craig Simpson, right?
Craig Simpson, Dana Mersen was the other one. Yeah. So went to the convention center.
But Craig Simpson had made it known that he didn't want to come
to
Toronto.
And we were sold on Wendell anyway. And and it is funny, I saw the two of them do a piece on our trade deadline show. It was great talking about the day. But so this is the first time it's going to be on TV, right? And so CBC was doing it. And so just before I went over to where Don Meehan was with his stable of clients, and I met Wendell and Dana Mersen, and I just said who I was, and I just said, and I'll be the guy, if we take one of you, like I'll be there with the Leaf sweater and you know, just trying to give him a little skinny what's going on. So I was about this far. I kind of made my way over to the bleachers, and I was about this far away. And meanwhile, before we started, the CBC cameras over you, we didn't know it'd be over your table. So we had sweaters with all different names under there. So we didn't want to pull the wrong one out, like, you know, so we're looking and looking. And so I got it all folded up. And honestly, as I say, Jerry McNamara announces the name,
and I go to make a step and give Don Whitman credit, kind of like Scott Oak does now, just boom. Like all of a sudden, I'm just like almost, because he's got the microphone in Wendell. So in Wendell's mouth talking. So they walk down slowly, doing a great piece. And I'm looking like the third wheel, like holding the sweater.
So this is the walk from the stands to the stage?
On the draft table. Yeah. The draft floor, and then keep walking. So it's never been done before, and this is the first pick. So I have no idea
how
far he's going to go. And I'm thinking, man, I'm looking like a loser here. Then all of a sudden, he stops middle. And it ends, which is great. And the thing is, I got Wendell to give me his jacket. This was the first time it was done on live TV. And then he put the Leaf sweater on, and just the place erupted. And there weren't a lot of people there, but it was a small venue. So it was like it made it all. That was the first day I was charged about the next season as well.
Yeah. What are your memories, Scott, the draft? I'm sure you've been through
a lot.
Well,
I remember that 85 draft. Yeah. There was a measure of excitement here that I don't think they've felt ever since in terms of a draft. And you'd mentioned the other day the Islanders made a big push at the last minute. Several teams were really making a push to try and get that pick. But I remember talking to Wendell and his dad and family leading up to it, and they were just so committed to wanting to be a part of that Leaf organization. And I don't know how much that factored into your guys' thinking when you were making that pick, because he really wanted it bad.
Well, absolutely. And whatever we want to say, I don't know how it works on this. I think nowadays they go to the suite later on and that, but the parents sat at the draft table for a while, and Harold Ballard just loved Les and Elma. Loved, so he got bored after three rounds and went back to the cottage.
Yeah.
But he goes, send some flowers to their hotel, you know, the whole thing. And it started a great little friendship that way. So it was a much more intimate thing, but it was a great, the right kind of pick on that day.
I'm curious about and it ties in nicely with Ekblad winning the Rookie of the Year and this defenseman developing, that Wendell played primarily defense in junior in Saskatoon, and then was a decision made immediately to move him up to the wing.
And I give guys like Danny Maloney and Jerry McNamara and Floyd Smith credit. Like, that was a big thing, because he played up at the World Juniors, if you remember. And
he did play. Okay.
And he was playing defense for a bad Saskatoon team. And but right off the bat, the idea was to move him to left wing, and that really was the right place for him.
Mm-hmm. I remember Wendell telling the story about that World Junior experience. The two things that happened was he got the phone call and thought, oops, the phone's ringing. That's not good, because it generally meant back in the day that you got cut. But the call was, and the words to him from the general manager at the time was, if you cut your hair, you can be on the team. So he says, I'm off to the barber right now. And the other thing is, you're going to play the wing. And he says, put me anywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that was the start of the experiment of him playing up front.
And it just speaks so volumes too. I mean, I didn't grow up in Toronto, but you could feel through the TV the love for that guy and just the way he played. And we just talked about being jacked for a season. I think of that, and I always bring it back. You only know your own experiences, but as a fan growing up, when the Canucks got Trevor Linden, there was hope for the first time in a long time. You knew he wasn't going to be necessarily, you know, a Hall of Famer, or wasn't going to lead the league in scoring, but he showed up every night, and is very similar to Wendell. They have similar careers that Trevor went to a final, beating, you know, Wendell on the way, but it was they dragged everybody else around them with their attitude and made it fun to go to the building after it had been really, really poor.
You talk about the respect they brought to the team, where a lot of guys just bring the skill level. You know what I mean? You know, being a first, which is fine, which is great, but you're right. They certainly brought character. There's never a shortage of character, and few and far between. And I don't really know of the top picks right now. You have to wait to see what kind of character they bring to the respective teams. And that's not a knock against McDavid or anybody else, but that's as tough a thing to do, or maybe even tougher than on the ice. But those two guys, and good Western boys, as Pat Quinn said when he drafted Trevor Linden, a true Westerner, right? Yeah. And they were perfect.
Guys like that have a presence. They don't have to say things sometimes. They just have a presence, and there's a feel about them that they're a special player, and they have that character, and they always lead and show by example.
Yeah. Well, Chris Johnson expects that there could be movement today. A gut feeling, do you think we'll see a trade before the end of the day, or will it begin to unfold tomorrow on draft day?
I think there's a good possibility business could get taken care of today.
Everyone's going to be close to their
phones. Some guys like to chase deadlines.
We will be here tomorrow to get you set. We'll talk to Jeff Merrick in Florida down on the floor and get you set for the draft, the 2015, no longer entry draft, the NHL draft. It's going to be on Sportsnet. For Scott Morrison, Gord Selleck, I'm Brad Fay. Enjoy your day. This has been Hockey Central at Noon on Sportsnet.